Hey, welcome everyone. We have another FT After Hours podcast we're going to throw out there for you. And this one I think is going to be pretty good. Could get a little interesting. But with us in the studio this evening, we got Mike Coolins.
Hello.
And Eric Monroe.
Hey, what's going on?
And Wayne Griffith.
Hey, guys.
And special guest tonight, someone who actually answers his phone when we call him, all the way from sunny Florida. We have Fred Provost on the line.
Hey, Fred.
Hey, that's me.
Hey, how's it going, buddy?
Yeah.
Better
very,
known
very
as
well.
Flying yep. Monkey, obviously.
Yeah, you people might not know his real name. Flying Monkey is what everybody usually calls him.
AKA.
So, how's the weather down there, Fred?
It's terrible. Freezing cold. It didn't get much out of the 50s today.
Oh, oh man.
Shut up. I appreciated the part about it being freezing cold until you said it was
six degrees
here.
Yeah, you know, it was brisk. It was out there in our jackets today.
Oh, jeez.
I got a bucket full of snow for you, Fred.
Well, and the funny thing is the pictures, the memes that they put out with the people, you know, in Florida and bundled up in jackets and 50-degree weather and up, you know, in your area, they're out in shorts and T-shirts. It's true because I did live in Massachusetts for a while. And, yeah, I remember we'd be out raking our leaves up in this kind of weather, just enjoying it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, just real quick, I know you recently just purchased a paraglider, right?
They call it a couple different things. It's a powered paraglider or a paramotor.
Mm-hmm.
It uses essentially the same type of parachute sail wing that they use for the paragliding, but it has the addition of a backpack little two-stroke motor.
So how is that going?
not as easy as I thought. I bought the product used from a friend of mine, but he's also an instructor, so he's been giving me instructions, and it's not just as simple as getting the wing up in the air and then running off and going to fly. There's a lot of ground handling that's involved, keeping that parasail up in the air above you, the paraglider in the air above you, is much more difficult than you would think. I saw these videos of the guys, and the thing would collapse and fall off to one side or the other. I said, it can't be that hard. No, it's just like RC. You see all the videos of the guys flying, and it looks easy, but once you actually try it, there's definitely skill involved.
How do you do your training? Is there like some kind of tandem outfit? How does that work?
Well, right now, it's strictly... But I met the guy down at the beach, and, you know, we unfurl the sail. It comes in, you know, you got a kind of a backpack bag it fits in. You open it up, you stretch all your lines out. You check to make sure all your lines are clear because they get tangled pretty easy. And he goes over that, showing you what difference the different lines going up actually do and what they mean. We spent a bit of time just kind of going over the parasail, the paraglider itself. He shows you some... kind of handling techniques that's pre-kiting, where you basically you're just inflating it on the ground. You're just bringing it up as a kind of a wall. And that takes a little, you practice with that a little bit. And then once you get comfortable keeping it inflated on the ground, then you try to bring it up over you. And, he's working with you. He's got you in a harness, and you've got it clipped onto that. And, it's, kind of these progressional steps that finally gets to the point where once you're able to keep this, this piece of material in the air, then you can worry about trying to get a motor on you and flying yourself.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So roughly about how many lessons until they say, okay, go ahead.
Well, that's like saying how many times you practice flying an RC airplane before you learn how to fly it. It varies. A lot of the intense training programs, you might do it in a week or 10 days. If you're doing it kind of, hit or miss, for day here, day there, weekends, whatever, some of the stuff I've been reading says it could take up to 2 months.
Wow.
But I'm not rushing.
Right.
This is, I'm naturally scared of heights.
Not an ideal
so
thing.
It's interesting to see how comfortable I am sitting in a nylon chair in the air, suspended by a bunch of fishing lines, basically. That should prove interesting.
What possessed you to do this, being afraid of heights, I must ask? Trying to conquer a fear?
The irony is, I'm not really afraid of heights. I love heights. I absolutely love heights. it's getting up to those heights, you know, climbing up a ladder or climbing up a tree stand or, you know, along the edge of a, you know, on the mountain, if you're climbing up along that, you know, cliff edge, you know, that's unnerving for me. But once I get up on top, I'm sitting there, I'm looking around, I love it.
Okay.
So I'm hoping that, you know, being in the chair, in control, feeling strapped in will be enough confidence booster to do it. But also with that, I'm watching, you know, a lot of videos, and the type of flying I want to do is kind of like my FPV. I'm not a big fan of going high and far with my FPV.
Mm-hmm.
I like being low and close and enjoying the landscape, you know, just barely skimming it. A lot of these guys are doing that down here along the beach, and they're, you know, 20, 30 feet off the ground most of the time.
Wow, okay. That would be awesome.
So last year at Flight Fest, you slept between two trees hanging in a bag. So I think, you know, sitting in a nylon chair in the sky is only the next step, right?
Yeah, I've got kind of a thing for that, I guess.
And by the way, just so you know, Wayne and we were inspired by your sleeping arrangements there. Wayne and I actually just purchased a couple of those hammocks.
Did you get the ones with the built-in screen?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, that is essential.
Oh, so you can fly FPV right from your hammock then, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, if I take the tarp and I fold it back, I've been known to do stuff like that.
With a built-in screen, right?
Yes.
Hey, Fred.
Not the video screen, a bug screen.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Fred, if it helps any, I've done the skydiving, and I'm not afraid of heights, but I absolutely hate ladders. I don't like being on a roof, but jumping out of an airplane, it felt a lot more safer.
Yeah, I kind of felt the
same
way.
5,000 feet than it does when you're 30 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
So that might come in.
I kind of explain it like as we were free falling, it's like doing 170 miles an hour on the back of a motorcycle.
Let me clarify. Heights is not my fear. Falling is my fear. So skydiving is probably not going to be on my list of two things to do.
Well, actually, when your parachute opens, you're no longer falling. You're just gliding. Yeah. So it's actually pretty good.
Reminds me of Bixler. He's afraid of heights, too. Let's get a kick out of his stories.
All right. Well, hey, let's before we jump in, I got a couple real quick stories before we get into the deep stuff, I guess you could say. One thing I wanted to tell Eric, because I don't know if he really knows this story. He might. I don't know. We'll find out. But right at the end, when they were finishing up with Rotor DR1, I got a call from James. He says, hey, we really need some help for this shoot. Do you mind coming out and helping? I was like, yeah, sure, whatever, no problem. Didn't think nothing of it, Eric. So they might have talked about it later. I don't even know about this?
I'm interested.
Okay. So, you know, normal thing, be here at 7, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so I show up there at 7, and Chad was running pretty late that day. So we were all kind of waiting and waiting. And, you know, Tom was starting to get pretty antsy. He's like, oh, where's he at? We got to get going.
This a day I wasn't there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I think I was in Mexico at that point.
Oh, okay. So I didn't even know what was going on. I really didn't have a clue. So Tom finally comes over, and he goes, you are comfortable flying rotor, aren't you? And I go, what?
What?
I go, are you serious? He's like, dead serious. He goes, yeah. I go, no. And he's like, oh, it'll be easy. We just got a couple shots. No big deal. Don't worry about it. And I don't know if I was like very last bottom of the barrel. I mean, I don't – why they called me, I really don't know, you know. So, needless to say, he's like, don't worry, Chad will be here. You can run a few batteries through it and everything. Don't worry about it. Well, I was nervous already. That's not my type. You know, I can fly around, nose in, figure, whatever you want me to do. But,
sure.
You know, so Chad was running late. He was actually working on rotor. He was having some problems with it. So we get right down to where we needed to shoot. It was a scene at the end of the road where I was, you know, following the kids around. So he goes, all right, hurry up. We'll run a battery through it real quick. Well, we fired it up, and the tail servo was bad.
Oh, no.
So right off the bat, we couldn't get it off the ground. So he tinkered around. We got that all fixed up, got it in the air, and I flew around. And needless to say, it's the first time I've flown rotor. I've only ever flown a tricopter twice, and that was Wayne's, and I flew David's once. That was it.
Oh, man.
Oh, rotor is a completely different tricopter than any of the other ones you might have flown.
Right. So,
well, luckily, he didn't have a lot of experience with that, so he didn't have any bad tendencies.
I flew a few circuits. Actually, it was way better than I thought it was going to be. It was actually pretty stable, and it was pretty smooth. Not bad. Your settings were a little touchy for me because I'm a thumb flyer, you know.
Sure.
So I had to dial in a little expo.
Yeah.
But other than that, I was like, okay, no problem. So we got all set up, ready to go. And I'm telling you, Eric, literally when they said action, I started shaking. And I told Wayne, I haven't shook like that in years flying anything. I literally was so nervous. I mean, it was like 15 degrees out, sweat pouring down my head. I mean, radio shaking, and then you got Chad beside me going, "You all right? You all right? Yeah, 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 Chad, I'm fine. I'm fine." I mean,
leave me alone.
Yeah. I got through it. No problems. I didn't crash it. I didn't hit anybody, and I got the shots. But yeah. I'm telling you, I was a nervous. Now, if I would have had a day with it or something, got to play with it a little bit, maybe fly around my kids a little bit.
Man, they threw you in the fire.
Yeah, again, sure. I'm not, you know, the Nano Blade, sure, I fly that around my house, my wife, you know, but you give me this big tricopter and want me to, you know, fly around these kids.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So how much weight did you lose on that?
I'm telling you, again, it was all mental. I got home that night. I must have slept for 10 hours.
Yeah, that's hilarious. That's draining. I remember you saying.
Yeah. So I didn't know if you ever knew that story.
No,
I
was unaware of that.
Really? And I didn't know. And then the funny thing was, I don't know, maybe you did make it back, but James called me in the middle of that week again. He's like, hey, any way you could come back out and fly again? I was like, well, I can't.
I think I'm booked that night.
I'm still sleeping from the last excursion.
I said, I can if you really need me. I will. I'll come out and help. But, you know.
Yeah, I went to Mexico for 4 days to film a job down there. Uh-huh. And so that might have been when I was gone.
Oh, I got you.
Do you know if it was pre-John Deere Gator or post?
Must have been pre. I don't remember a John Deere Gator.
Yeah, when I got back from Mexico, I found out the helicopter had been slammed into the front of.
And no, that was after.
And then ran over by the gator.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh, what happened to this thing?
Yeah, that was after.
Okay,
that
so you got after. To fly it before the arm got bent.
No, after.
Oh, you flew after. Oh, yes. Goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, that was after, because Chad had to do a lot of work, I guess.
Okay, yeah, I heard it got ran over and damaged pretty good.
I did that.
Yeah, so I just figured I wanted to tell you about
that. That's funny.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why the tail servo had some issues.
Yeah, that's very possible. I mean, but I'm telling you, I just wanted to give you a few props, you know.
Yeah, it's funny because that helicopter, you know, we built it on a flight test electro hub, and it was a prototype of the Tough Tilt, and, you know, it wasn't the new version, but we had a prototype 3D printed one of that, and, you know, quite frankly, I really didn't have any trouble even out of the 3D printed ones. I had one of them that somehow, between flying one day and the next day, like the helicopters got taken back to the office every night, and it got broke. But other than that, I don't think we ever really had any trouble. And, you know, with the body taken off, it flew amazing. I could loop it and flip it and all kinds of stuff. Yeah. But with the body on there, you know, because we had to whole make the body, I know they're working on some 3D modeling and stuff to get a real lightweight version of it now. But the one we had to make for the film, you know, obviously was heavy.
Yeah.
So balance was kind of an issue. The servo that we had up in the front that kept the camera to where it would kind of articulate and move.
Right.
It left the battery pushed back a little. So we flew kind of like a 3D airplane. Yeah. We were a little tail dragon.
Right.
So it was definitely more challenging to fly than a lightweight one. But, you know, I think once, like you said, once you get used to it and you know, it flew smooth.
It did.
The heaviness of it did give it a smooth factor.
Sure. Right.
So, it just was something you had to get used to.
Yeah, I got through it. And the only other thing that threw me off a little bit, only because it was a little kind of windy and gusty that day, was the auto stabilization, or the auto, was auto, it auto level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the one that I flew mainly, the auto level on the KK board didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be why it didn't work.
Yeah, yeah.
If you flick the switch, it would go crazy. Oh, I think the accelerometer on the board was damaged. So and I always fly manual anyway, so it didn't really matter.
Right,
but
right.
Yeah, I think that one was not operational.
Yeah. So, but I got through it.
The shaking is hilarious, though.
Yeah, I literally, and you know, after we did the first shoot, you know how it is. You go through after shoot, scene after scene, you keep doing it over and over. Mm-hmm. And I kept telling, why am I shaking? What's wrong?
When that action word comes down the pipe, everything changes.
It does.
It's like a wheelbarrow load of pressure just gets sat right on top of you.
Yeah.
And then to know you're flying the one and only. So
that was the big thing. I did not want to crash it. You know, I just wanted to get through there. I didn't want to hit anybody. Buddy.
Sure.
You know, and you get through one scene, you're like, and they're like, okay, take two. You're like, oh, dang it.
I thought we were done.
Yeah, that one was perfect.
That's funny.
So. See, and I wish I was there because I can remember the day we were flying and I flew for the first time off of water. I was shaking like an idiot.
Oh, I'm sure.
And he's sitting there laughing because I'm shaking so bad. Now the shoe was on the other foot. I would have loved to have been there. Of course, I totally understand.
Yeah.
That would have been hard.
Yeah, I was. It was an eye-opener, that's for sure. All right, what do you say, guys? You want to get into some of this stuff, and we'll see where we go and what
you
happens.
You prefaced it with deep stuff. I'm kind of scared.
It's just been stuff that's kind of hot topics in the RC community, as everybody knows. So we just wanted to kind of touch through it and talk about it, get some feelings, opinions. I'm sure everybody's a little different. I don't know. We're probably all kind of on the same page, but maybe have different views just because of different things we do, in the hobby. So, and of course, first thing we're going to start off with, and this is, probably worldwide news by at this point. And it's the Phantom 2 that crashed in the White House lawn.
Man, we're diving headfirst into the deep end, aren't we?
And the funny thing is, that probably got more press than the full-size plane that landed in the lawn there, too.
Yeah, right.
Right. And I was telling Wayne earlier, and you might know this, Fred, I thought this was funny. I was reading a little bit on the forums and stuff, and one guy pointed out and sent a photo that in 1974, he stole a military helicopter and landed it in the front lawn, and they got him out and arrested him, and he only did 1 year.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So, well, here's what I'm going to do real quick. I'm just going to brief through the story. I'm sure most people know, but we do get some people that listen, in Australia, parts of Europe and everything. So I'm just going to brief over this, and then we'll get into it, talk about it, get our feelings on it, and go from there. White House radar system designed to detect flying objects like planes, missiles, and large drones failed to pick up a small drone that crashed into a tree on the South Lawn early Monday morning, according to law enforcement officials. The crash raised questions as to whether the Secret Service could bring down a similar object if it endangered President Obama. The drone, which was about 2 feet in diameter, weighed about 2 pounds, and was operated by a government employee whom the Secret Service did not identify, which we don't know really why. The agency said the employee was flying the object near the White House around 3 a.m., again, really strange, for recreational purposes when he lost control of it. Officials did not explain why the man, who does not work at the White House and who has not been charged with a crime, was flying the drone in that hour. The crash was the latest security breach showing the difficulties the Secret Service has had protecting the White House in recent years. In September, a man with a knife climbed over the White House fence and made it deep inside the building before officers tackled him. So then there's been numerous other instances where people have gone over the fence and stuff like that. But where do we want to start with this?
Wow.
Well, they did leave the part out where he claimed to be intoxicated at the time of piloting it.
Yes. Yeah. And the funny thing was, is I believe that he actually called them after it happened and let them know, hey, this was me doing so.
When he seen himself on CNN the next day.
Right. Now, the other funny thing is obviously they mentioned that he's a government employee, but it's been, like Wayne was saying, it's been very hush-hush on this guy and everything, where if it was me or you, Fred, we might even be sitting in jail right
exactly.
now. Getting some serious questioning.
My first thought was, how much do government employees make? Because if they can walk away from a $1,400 helicopter and be like, it flew away.
It wasn't his, though. It was his buddy's.
It's always easier to lose someone else.
So, fly it like you stole it.
Right. Yeah, right. What do you think, Fred?
Well, I just can't help but picture, the guy waking up from his drunken stupor in the bushes near the White House with a transmitter in his hand thinking, oh, God, what have I done?
Yeah, we were trying to figure out, if there was an issue, if they knew what happened. Wayne was reading that... What was it? He hit the return to home button.
Right.
And
the battery died, and they think that it may have crashed.
It's important to note, too, it wasn't an FPV, I don't believe.
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't FPV.
Your line of sight at 3 a.m.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Like, well, I read somewhere, and correct me if I'm wrong, that it was flown from a balcony. They were drinking with friends, and he flew it away, and it got out of where he couldn't get it back. And like at that point, I'm just sitting here wondering, how do you just walk away? Like, even if it was his friends, why wasn't his friend running down the street chasing this thing?
He was probably drunk.
It's possible.
Public intox.
Hold my beer.
Yeah, exactly.
Watch this.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I was somewhat guilty of posting pictures of a government employee flying a drone. It was the Joe Biden holding a transmitter in the window.
Oh, that is funny.
Yeah.
Now we know the White House employee, or the government employee that it was.
Yeah, right. And I think now they've released his name, and they said, "What do you have the info on that, or who he was and who he works
for?" Well, he works for the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. So I looked this place up, and they say their mission to provide timely, relevant, and accurate geospatial intelligence of support of national security.
Oh, wow. Exactly.
Yeah. What does that mean? Yeah.
What's the acronym again?
That's so, almost as long as the SHIELD acronym for the Avengers.
Right. Yeah. And and Wayne was talking too, out of all places in the United States, and this thing ends up there.
In the lawn of the White House.
Mm-hmm. Like Wayne was saying, is this kind of a conspiracy theory?
There were various ones that went around about that.
Was this planned? Who knows at this point?
I would love to think that this was conspiracy thinking. It's rather convenient that a government employee was the one that was guilty. But you would think that the government is better at this than to admit that it was a government employee that did it. Couldn't they find some patsy to blame it on?
The fall guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point, too. I don't know.
It's just really untimely and really sad that it had to happen that way. It really brings a negative light to what we're trying to, to do.
It goes right into the whole dads with drones thing recently, and, Christmas gifts gone wrong.
Right. Right.
Well, did you guys read about or hear about the guy who flew this one was huge shortly before, and I don't know if that's something you're going to bring up next, is the guy in Istanbul who flew the Phantom right over the airport.
I did hear about it, yes.
And so my biggest reaction to this, and again, this is only my opinion. This is a huge sore topic for a lot of people out there. But my opinion is this. If I get in my SUV and I drive down the runway at Cleveland Hopkins Airport, are they going to ban cars after I'm arrested? Right. And the answer is no. They're going to arrest me. I'm going to pay for my crime. And everyone else in life is going to go on with normal everyday driving. Yeah. Right. So when someone does something irresponsible with a quadcopter or anything, I mean, a paramotor or a small Cessna, anything, why don't they just go after? Oh, and that raises the big question, why are they not punishing the people who do the wrong and leaving the rest of us who fly in farm fields alone.
Right.
So that's my biggest issue, I'd say.
It's the false sense of security. We made a law. We did something.
Yeah.
What we did. We made a law. You're safe now.
Sure.
Oh, okay, we're safe. We can forget about it.
Well, and that I think is the biggest issue among all of us hobbyists and pilots is that there is no law, really. There's regulations and it changes once a month. Every time we get on Facebook or every time we get on the internet, there's a new FAA ruling or regulation, but there's really nothing that has gotten put into actual law
enforced
so that all of us know. Here's the end all say all. This is what you have to do. Go do it and you're good.
Right. So, go ahead, Wayne. I know you want to say something. Go ahead, Wayne.
Well, and I don't want to get too crazy with some of this conspiracy stuff, but just from looking at the big picture, we got a government that wants to get bigger. They want more control. They want more money. They want to spend more money. And people are like sheep. You can herd people around real easy with fear. And too many people that don't want to think and they want to, the sky is falling and they will fall for something like this without thinking it through. Like Eric said, I can commit any crime with anything and you're not going to go after the object. You go after the person that committed the crime. So you have idiots out there that you know, get drunk, do stupid things. They're going to do it anyways. But us normal Joes that are out here who just want to have some fun with a hobby, we're going to be penalized. We're all going to be standing here saying, excuse me for what? Yeah. You know, just because the government wants to get bigger. And then even with AMA, you know, they said, well, the FAA doesn't have the money or the resources. Well, no, they don't. But they play on the fear and get people going. They're going to tax something, and they are going to generate the money. And then they got their nice big office that they want.
Right. Now, here's just – I'm throwing this out here. Do you think it's because they can't – they don't have the manpower and the resources to regulate this to say, okay, if you fly – within 3 miles of an airport, or you do this, you get 2 years in jail. Or if you take this and fly over a crowd of people, you get just thrown, you know,
fines.
Yeah, fines.
Have a set of regulations.
Exactly, to where you know exactly, hey, if I do this, ooh, it's going to be bad.
Well, you know, and I think, too, that, you know, I brought up earlier the fact that someone could do the exact same thing on the back lawn of the White House with a paramotor, you know, and I'm only picking on that because Fred brought it up.
Right.
I'm going to buy one, too.
Fred, we don't want to see you in the news next week.
But here's the thing. Do you know why they're not – you don't have to have a license to fly an ultralight or a paramotor. But nobody's going after those because not very many people are utilizing that technology.
Right.
Everybody is buying DJI Phantoms.
Yes.
So, you know, not to pick on the Phantom.
Right.
And it's funny you mentioned that. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. Let's see. I got a story here from 94 where a intruder crashes a plane to the White House.
Yeah.
You know, they stole the plane and they flew it right into the lawn of the White House.
Right.
Oh, and I know private pilots were freaking out when that happened, thinking that they were going to lose their rights to fly, you know, personal aircraft. So...
Well, and that airspace is already the most regulated airspace probably in the world.
Yes.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'd have to be living under a rock, I presume, to not know that flying by the White House is probably a bad idea.
Right.
when I first heard, I mean, I literally had it was a literal face palm.
Right.
When I read that a quadcopter landed on the White House lawn, but you know, you'd have to be living under a rock to not know. And then my first thing was, why are they flying by the White House? Are they trying to get a great picture? Mm. Wait, it was 3 a.m.
Exactly.
are they trying to go covert ops? I mean, this isn't Call of Duty.
Right. Yes.
What always happens at 3 a.m.? Just bad decisions.
Exactly.
Yeah. Not far down at 2 a.m. for a reason.
Sure. Right. And it was funny because when I first heard about it, too, I thought it was just some kid who might have had, you know, like a $20 or $30 toy. It was out near the sidewalk and the wind took it over. That's the first thing I thought of.
Yeah. Go ahead.
What's
sad about this entire thing is there's been such a swing, in my opinion, of people's reactions to this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here at Flight Test, we want to get as many new people into the hobby as mm-hmm. we can because we love flying RC. It's great. We want to encourage kids to build a plane with their dad and have that experience. But at the same time, there's a lot of guys who've been in the hobby for 20 years that are like, no, we don't want these people buying Phantoms from B&H Photo or, you know, wherever, and going out and having the ability to, quote, wreck our hobby. Mm-hmm. So it's such a, you know... It's such a hard thing to split that down the middle. We want to bring new people to the hobby, but we want to bring people to the hobby responsibly
right.
so we're not landing at the White House.
Right. And I reading on the forums, too, in a way, I understand what they're saying, where back in the day, you couldn't just walk into anywhere, buy an RC airplane, take it out, and just fly it. You had to go to a field, get some instruction, learn the rules, and know what to do.
Sure.
Where today... anybody can go anywhere or on Amazon or whatever and buy one of these and have absolutely no clue, brush through the instruction manual. Oh, wow, I can push this button and it comes back to me.
Yeah.
And fire this thing up and go. And I think that kind of is a problem that we got to
address.
Well, on top of that, you used to have the old man at the field that smack you in the back of the head when you're doing something stupid. He'd say, don't do that.
Yeah.
And the one thing you have now is when you post a video on YouTube, you know, you get the comments from people saying you're an idiot, don't do that, but then you shut off comments. And so you don't even have that anymore.
Sure.
Yeah. And then you get the other side of them that don't really understand the hobby, where the guy's 900 feet in the air and 30 miles away, and they're like, oh, dude, that's the best video ever. You got to do some more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The encouragement.
Yeah.
Well, and then you have the guys that are getting flamed and they like it. They like that kind of attention. So that's exactly what they're going to do. It's a shock factor. Hey, let's go for it.
Negative press is better than zero.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. Well, we've kind of beat that in the ground here a little bit, and I think we all agree on there. Now, we're going to go right in that kind of correlates with this subject, and of course, that's DJI announced that they have their new flight features, limiting flight in the D.C. metropolitan area. Now, I'll just read through this here real quick, give you a little bit of information on it. Let's see. Additional limits will prohibit flight across borders. DJI will release a mandatory firmware update for the Phantom 2, Phantom 2 Vision, and Phantom 2 Vision Plus to help users comply with FAA's notice to airmen, which restricts unmanned flight around the Washington, D.C. area. The updated firmware will be released in the coming days, adds a no-fly zone centered on downtown Washington, D.C., extends out 15.5-mile radius in all directions. Phantom pilots in this area will not be able to take off or fly into this airspace. The restriction is part of a planned extension of DJI's no-fly zone system that prohibits flight near airports and other locations where flight is restricted by local authorities. These extend no-fly zones will include over 10,000 airports registered with the International Air Transport Association and will expand no-fly zones to ensure they cover the runways at major international airports. DJI is also continuing to update its no-fly list in compliance with local regulations to include additional sensitive locations and to prevent flight across national borders. These new safety features will be released across DJI's flying platform in the near future. Now, I understand what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're covering their ass is what they're doing.
Yeah.
I agree with them, but I don't agree with them. You know, what's that going to do to the my question is too, Eric, and I don't know if you know this. Do you think this is going to trickle down into all their GPS controllers?
Well, and that's something that I've been, I fly all DJI controllers. And so it's definitely been on my mind. That's for sure. One of the things that I when we flew the Inspire, this before we even did the firmware update that locked me out, which we talked about in the episode, we were flying with the glider.
Mm-hmm.
We're at an RC field that doubles as an airport.
Exactly.
Yep. And so what happens when the airport is shut down for the weekend for Joe Nall and we bring an Inspire down there and we can't get above 50 feet off the ground.
Right.
Or take off at
all. Or take off at all. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And so that was a huge thing. And one of the things I ran into, you know, I was in direct communication with the glider pilot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was in a place where he'd have to literally hit the trees before he'd hit me, which means he has bigger problems than worrying about me.
Right.
But I couldn't get above 100 feet.
Oh really?
Yeah, I was full throttle, and I'm like, "What is wrong?" It was one of the. It was like the second time I ever flew it, and I couldn't figure out why this crazy thing wouldn't climb above. It said 99 feet, and it would not go up.
No kidding.
And I was barely clearing the treetops, so I had to bring it back, and then read later that there's these airport restrictions, and so yeah, that kind of
you experienced it then.
Yeah, I did firsthand. Wow. And what really kind of boggled my mind is they kept me under 100 feet. Mm-hmm. Which is the worst place to be when you're in the landing pattern at an airport.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if I'm at 50 feet, like, I'm staring the pilot in the face and he's coming in on final.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
So, you know, I think it's a system that there's definitely positives and negatives, and there's two sides to every situation. You know, we got to talk with Eric Chang.
Right.
I heard the other day. Yep. And, you know, I don't think DJI, you know, and I'm going to say this carefully, I don't think them attempting to put some regulations in to keep things, I don't see the need to fly in downtown Washington, D.C.
Right.
So I'm going to say I probably agree with the fact that you can't fly there. However, if I was a Phantom owner and I lived in downtown Washington, D.C. and I wanted to hover it in my living room for some test stuff, now I have an issue. I can't fly this $1,500 piece of equipment that I purchased with my own money. So there's really big up and down on what they're doing. There's, you know, I think that there's definitely going to have to be some working through to get to a situation that everyone's happy with.
It's also kind of scary that system, well, obviously it runs off of GPS, but it's just kind of scary that they can put that kind of firmware You know what I mean? You plug that thing in and boom.
And boom. Josh actually brought that up in our Inspire episode. What's going to happen if the FAA decides to get a bug, you know, one day and just say, hey, we're done. No more drones. Right. And they issue a thing and DJI shuts down your $3,000 helicopter. I mean, that's going to cause like rioting. And I don't know. That's going to be touchy.
Which could also lead to, you know, if this is the case and, you know, with today's technology and computers and stuff, say down the road and they start doing this, can the government actually start monitoring these things? You know, where are these people flying? What are they doing? You get a knock on your door. Hey, why were you flying over there?
Yeah.
You know.
Sure. Which makes the new NAS 32 board really attractive.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's funny because there's such a shift in the way this hobby used to be. You know, you started to mention earlier, you would go through months of building a box of balsa wood.
Yeah.
And so naturally, when you go to the flying field, you're going to be responsible with something that you spent months of your life putting together.
Right.
Sweat and tears.
You're not going to make these decisions with this thing that are going to be irresponsible or you're going to smash it into the ground. You know, and then looking at helicopters, you had to know about throttle collective pitch curves and leveling swash plates and balancing rotors, and like there was a lot of knowledge that had to go into even lifting a helicopter off the ground.
Right.
Now you can take it out of the box and hit a button.
Exactly.
So that's, you know, there's a lot to be said about that, and that's the shift, I think, in how things are going.
How fast it's going.
Yeah.
And that's the other problem, is the technology is going so fast. I mean, we can barely keep up, let alone the FAA and the government, and you know, they're changing so fast. So I got to wonder if is it why maybe they're not instantly putting, rules and regulations in place, is because they can't keep up with it. As soon as they sit down and think, hey, this is going to work, 2 months later, a month later, that's not going to work now because we have this technology.
Sure.
I don't know.
Well, you could still put out the laws that says, hey, you fly within this far a distance of an airport or within, you know, people now, you know, the media, who can be our biggest enemy right now, somebody could be peeping in your bedroom. Well, excuse me, that's already against the law, period.
Yeah, there's laws for that already.
Yeah, you don't need more laws for stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, so we don't want people flying over the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Okay, then come out with laws that says, there's certain areas you will not fly over the heads of the public. You cannot fly, and come out with rock solid stuff like that.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Guidelines.
Right. Because the common sense guys, like us guys sitting here, we're not going to do that because, you know, that's just dumb.
Yeah.
But those people out there, well, they didn't say. Well, unfortunately, that's what the laws are for.
But the airport thing, though, he said that they shut it down for the weekend. So how does the law enforce that?
Have the law that says, now, if it's shut down, it's no longer an airport. When we have Flight Fest, you know.
But you're not going to get around their firmware if they haven't shut down at that airport.
Exactly.
Normally. So that's an issue.
Yeah, the technology will fail. Where just have the laws and then, you know, but then again, how do you enforce
that?
But the thing is, okay, when you do cause damage, when you do get caught, then they can prosecute it.
Right.
But to just throw a blanket out there and shut everybody down. And I mean, there's a lot of money to be made on this stuff, and people spent a lot of money in this already. And that's why I won't even budge right now, because it's like, you know, I can't see spending that much money and to find out the day after I buy something, the FAA shuts it down.
Yeah. Right.
So,
which admittedly is why I haven't spent a lot of money recently.
Yeah.
I spent almost $10,000 on my aerial video rig a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And now, like, I have upgrades I need to do, and I'm quite frankly a little nervous about spending that kind of money to find out in a couple months I have a paperweight that
costs
me, a fortune.
And the thing that makes me crazy is, this is supposed to be our hobby.
It's supposed to be fun.
Right.
We have enough stress in life. This is supposed to be the fun stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And to have it all getting trashed because of idiots and, you know, drunks and whatever, and power grabbers out there. It's just like, really, guys? Can't we keep this thing simple and have fun?
Right.
What do you think, Fred? You're being awful quiet over there.
Did we lose him?
Oh, maybe we lost him.
That's why he's so quiet. I was like, I never heard him be that quiet that long.
Will the real flying monkey please stand up?
Says he's still there. That's weird. Maybe I'll call him back here and
Maybe he got another phone call.
Yeah. All right. Well, while I try to get Fred back on there, I'll throw this out here too real quick. And I know I mentioned it. 3D Robotics brought a new, I guess it's a quadcopter. It's an Iris Plus. Oh, there you are.
Hey, there he is.
You disappeared for a little while.
That's why when I was sputtering, you guys couldn't hear me.
So we got you back. Everything's good?
Yeah. Let me interject. I know you started off on a different tangent, but let me just vent my thing.
Sure.
I fly at an airport, a model aviation field, that's within a few miles of a major airport.
Mm-hmm.
Another field I fly at borders the airport. So to have these blanket statements to say that you're not allowed to fly within so many miles of an airport is somewhat ridiculous. Mm-hmm. There's so many AMA, actual AMA sanctioned fields that are within or bordering airports, or even on airports, like you said with Joe Nall. That rule itself, I mean, probably should be looked at a little bit more closely.
Yeah, right. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, that's where the technology part of it will fail right now, because you just can't do it.
Yeah. Which brings us up, Fred, we were I got another one here for you, and you may or may not know this, but and I know Hobby King's also working on this. They kind of threw out a teaser video here probably about a month ago, but 3D Robotics just come out with the Iris Plus, which is a small camera platform quadcopter, though, that actually flies autonomous, that will actually follow you through an app on your phone. Have you seen this?
I've seen variations of it.
Mm-hmm.
The eye cameras or whatever they get, the eye drones and stuff. Yeah, my only thing is, with the battery technology, is that really useful? How far can it follow you? Especially when they're talking these little mini drones.
Right, right. And, that's kind of one of my points I wanted to bring up a little bit is here was my thinking. I also seen a couple, like at the CES show out at Vegas, they actually have a couple companies now out to have they call them the selfie drones, whether some of them were small that go around your wrist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's my thinking. Just with the little Blade Nano quadcopter, I've wrapped that thing in my wife's hair. Let me tell you, she was not happy, and it took a long time to get this thing out. Mm. So now you have something, just say as small as the wrist one, and these kids are buying these because they're going to be fairly cheap. They're looking at like $100.
It doesn't fly around your wrist. It actually clips on.
It's like a bracelet.
It's actually the quad itself.
And it's almost like a boomerang. Yeah. You take the thing off, you chuck it out there, it takes off, goes out 20-30 feet, snaps a picture, and comes back. If you're out in a crowded area or around people, or it's windy, and these people, kids, whatever, start chucking these things out, mm-hmm. they hit somebody, get wrapped up in somebody's hair, I could just see this as a huge lawsuit.
Yeah, God forbid you threw a baseball and hit someone. I mean, that just goes out the window.
But yeah.
You hit them with a wrist-mounted quadcopter.
Right.
You're going to make the news.
Right. So,
yeah.
I don't get me wrong. I love the technology.
Oh, sure.
I love following it, seeing where it's going to go. But when you get this kind of stuff like this, I can't be good.
Was that you said the Nano you got stuck in your
wrist? Yes.
Because Chad did the same thing. Oh. With
Julie. Ooh.
I don't think there's too many of us that have been guilty of that.
Yeah.
Here we are. We should probably admitting our carelessness with these dangerous drones. But, it does kind of illustrate the overreaction of people. I mean, again, who of us haven't, caught our little mini drones in our wife's hair?
Right.
You're not married. But, yeah, the overreaction on the threat level of these is kind of high.
Right. But my questioning was, now that you have some of the big ones out here, like this Iris Plus, that loses GPS signal, or something happens, or, this thing's flying autonomous, takes off on its own and hits somebody or something. I just don't know if the technology is quite ready for something like this. I don't know. That's kind of just my thinking. I love it. I think it's awesome. I'd love to have something like that, but I don't know with everything going on if it's practical at this point.
Again, with the battery technology, I don't think it's really practical at a consumer level, but the consumers don't seem to know that. It's probably end up being a fad once they realize the battery life's not working to get out.
Well, I think the IRIS, they're saying that they can get 15 minutes out of a flight time, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, some of these nowadays are getting 15, 20 minutes. You know, that's quite a bit of time, really.
Yeah, but they're advertising them to these guys doing sports. You know, you're out on a bicycle and it's chasing you on the bicycle. You're out surfing and it's falling you out on the surfboard. Well, the first time one of these drops in the ocean, because you swam out to one wave and you started riding one wave and it took, you know, 20 minutes to do it. Well, 5 minutes ago, the thing dropped in the ocean. Or it dropped off the edge of the cliff because you're riding your mountain bike down the mountain.
Or if you're riding your mountain bike and this thing's following you and you go into a crowd of people, how's this thing going to know to avoid, you know? I mean, I don't know.
Well, and my thing is, how does it know where to come back to? Is it flying via GPS? Is it homing in on a signal?
Well,
on
it does. It's supposed to home in on your wrist.
Yeah, right.
I'm thinking it's a Bluetooth thing.
That could be.
And it's following the GPS in your phone. But, you know, again, on that note, how many times have you had your GPS on your phone shut down because your phone went to sleep?
Yeah, right. Exactly. The concept and everything is really cool. I just don't think we're quite ready and there yet with everything.
Well, I think it's a kind of a culture statement, too, how obsessed we are with selfies. I mean, selfie sticks, selfie drones.
I agree. Yeah. I agree 100%. So, I don't know. We'll have to keep an eye on some of this stuff and see where it goes. I agree with you, Fred. I think it's just kind of a fad right now. Maybe a year from now, you know, who cares? You know, I don't know. So, all right. Another subject that's, I think, a little crazy here, but we all know that, you know, we're trying to get some kind of regulation for this, and Eric, this is going to be right up your alley with this, since this is kind of your business and what you do for a living. But an Arizona realtor became the first to get FAA permission for aerial drone photography. Now, you might be saying, oh, wow, that's awesome. Maybe they're finally, you know, letting up and, you know, we're going to say, go for it. No. Wait, now let me just read through this and let you know what this guy went through to get this. The Federal Aviation Administration is notoriously strict about the use of aerial camera drones for commercial purposes. Much of the commercial imagery you find online was captured illegally without the permission of the agency.
Based on what law?
Exactly. Realtor Douglas Tredu of Tucson, Arizona, became the first real estate agent in the country to be given permission to use his drone for his property listings. The permission is given in the form of an exemption, which are difficult to come by. Of the 214 requests for exemptions it has received so far, only 14 have been granted by the FAA. The FAA reports that Mr. Tredu's exemption authorized him to fly the Phantom 2 Vision Plus quadcopter to enhance his academic community awareness and augment real estate listing videos. Unfortunately for Tredu, the exemption does not give him permission to use his drone whenever and wherever he wants. Now, listen, this is what just blows my mind. One of the main stipulations is that there always needs to be an observer present, which I agree with that, and the drone is being piloted. And here's where it gets interesting. The pilot is required to have an FAA private pilot certificate and current medical certificate. Now, that blows my mind.
Based on what law? That's what I keep coming back to. They have no, you know, and I'm going to preface my statements here with the fact that I am not against following the rules.
Right.
At the same time, they have to be relevant.
Right.
You know, for them to come out and say, oh, you have to have a private pilot's license now. I mean, as of when?
Right.
And when was this announcement made? Because this is news to me, and I keep up on this stuff. So.
And here's my thought, obviously, because I do have a pilot's license.
Sure.
Now, when I was getting into this hobby, you know, I was always intrigued with RC flight and everything. And, you know, now I got a pilot's license. I'm going to go down and buy an RC plane and I'm going to take that sucker off and I'm going to fly around because I have a pilot. I'm telling you right now, that pilot's license has
nothing to do
nothing,
with
nothing to
apples
do with
apples and oranges.
Now,
two things.
Go ahead.
Two things. One, I can see it because they want you to have a understanding of airspace law and how to read an aeronautical map.
I understand. I agree with
it
that.
It gives them leverage on you. If you mess up, they take away your flying license. Your
yes,
license,
sir.
Lots of money and time to get. So there's this, you know, threat of punishment there that they can actually hold over you.
But I mean, you know, are people really going to go out and spend, you know, who knows what it's up to now, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 for a private pilot's license to go fly their $400 camera quadcopter?
No.
I mean, come not on, any. People.
And then you pointed out the medical thing, too. That's yeah, pretty
It also requires a medical. And the great point that Wayne brought up, he's like, well, what, you know, what if you're in a wheelchair? You know, I'm guessing, you know, you could just get a third class medical every 2 years, which was what I have. But you can't get a medical for a private pilot's license. You know,
and they enjoy that the most.
Yeah. And here's a guy who just, you know, wants to go out and fly his little camera.
A lot of knowledge about it.
Right.
Well, I think first they're talking about commercial. I don't think you're going to have a private pilot's license to just go out and sit in a wheelchair necessarily and enjoy flying.
Nah, true.
I think it's for the commercial purpose.
So now you're discriminating against people with a disability? They can't have a commercial business?
Well, no, that's what they're saying is you have to have a medical to have a commercial business. So, yeah, that's going to discriminate against somebody.
So I can't wait for that lawsuit.
Yeah, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's a... Wow. I'm kind of blown away right now because I didn't know that. And, you know, we keep reading. I see, you know, I'm a part of a bunch of forums and a bunch of groups on Facebook and, you know, various social media platforms. And I read every single day. And it seems like it's changing every day.
Yeah.
You know, there's a new thing. Oh, the FAA says this. And now they say that. I don't think they know, honestly, what they want to say. I think we need to find something and land on it.
Well, and the problem is I've been following this for a long time, over 10 years. There's been groups of us trying to work with the FAA. They've been sitting, the FAA has been sitting down with different little, you know, little organizations trying to create a rate-controlled, you know, professional organization. And for 10 years, the FAA has been saying, oh, yeah, next year.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not like this is something that just sprung up on them.
Yeah, right. Sure. Like, and all of a sudden, here it is staring us in the face, and they don't have any preparations made to deal with it.
Right.
It's the elephant in the room for sure.
Yeah. What do you think, Wayne? I know. I see the wheels turning. I know. I see the wheels turning. I've been around even too much.
You know, fuming back there.
Yeah. Come on, Wayne. Give us what you think.
I'm ready to go home. Go fly something. This is supposed to be fun. I don't get into that.
Which, luckily, we're still having fun doing it. But you know,
I think having a private pilot's license is a little much.
Oh, that's ridiculous!
To fly a $200 quadcopter. I mean, you know, once again, this keeps coming back to the same thing that we've talked about over and over and over again. Punish the people who are doing the wrong. Leave the guys who aren't alone.
Right.
Make some regulations that are justifiable. Don't fly over 400 feet.
Right.
That, to me, like, when I fly FPV, I barely go above the treetops or, you know, maybe 200 feet at the most. Once you get up higher than that, at least for what I do with aerial video, the shot's ugly at that point.
Right.
I can get in a real airplane and look at that view. You know, the intimacy of that right over skimming the tops of the trees, you know, shot, that's what these quadcopters and hexacopters and stuff are made for. Like, that's the shot we really want anyway.
Right.
So, you know,
I agree with learning airspace where they're and all
go
that.
Go to ground school.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But you don't have to have a private pilot's license to fly an ultralight.
No.
So why should you have to have one to fly nano?
Well, let me play devil's advocate here. Maybe this is just a temporary thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything you read, it keeps talking about this trial period. This is a trial. So maybe the, you know, private pilot's license is just something they put out there as part of their trial requirements. So that they can figure out, okay, this is the minimum that a pilot for a drone would have to know in order to operate in a commercial way safely.
Yeah, but you would think they would at least would have talked to some maybe already people that have been doing this and say, hey, look, do you think a private pilot's license would be beneficial? You know what I mean?
Who sits around the coffee table and comes up with this stuff?
Exactly.
I guess if you want me to be totally blunt and truthful, when people sit around a table and say, you know what, I think we should, you know, lift their cup of coffee and say, I think we should propose that you have a private pilot's license, all in favor, here,
yeah.
You know, how does that get decided upon?
Well, I think, and to me, this is just speculation, but I think it right now they're just trying to make it look like they're active, like Fred was saying. You know, these guys had opportunity for years and they've never done anything. Now there's pressure being put on them. They have to look like they're doing some kind of action, even though it is as dumb as a bag of rocks. But actually, but the big picture, I think what it boils down to, and I think maybe that's why they don't come out with just plain old laws, is there's money to be made.
Sure.
This in anything, follow the money.
Yeah. Right,
you know, this is a big field. There's going to be a lot of money to be made, and this thing's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And so they want to get a piece of that pie. Oh, they want to jump in on there. So now they have to try to figure out, how can we do this? How can we grow our organization? How can we generate more money? Just follow the dollars, guys. It's not going to be something simple as far as creating a simple law that says you can't fly over an airfield or whatever. No, they need to make money, and that's what they want to do. They want more power and more money.
Well, on the conspiracy note side of things, and following the money, like Wayne says, who's got the most to lose? And you're thinking about the commercial, and you're thinking too small. You're thinking about commercial pilots and stuff like that. The big industry, what's coming up, is the military applications of these. Okay? And if anybody with a 3D printer and a CNC machine and a little bit of skills with a computer and programming can design a drone that's on par with something that Raytheon or Lockheed Martin or Boeing or those guys can do with the big R&D costs, if they can be on the same level playing field, that's not good for them. So if they can ban the average guy from being able to operate commercially and being able to even compete with them, that's money in their pocket.
Sure. It narrows the playing field huge.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I think that there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, Peter from here at Flight Test has done some stuff for conceptualization for projects at NASA.
Yeah.
So, you know, the everyday Joe this day and age has access to a lot of really good stuff, and maybe that's a threat.
And not an everyday Joe. I mean, how old was he when they were doing that? I mean, wasn't he still in high school?
I'm not sure. Well, the only one of us here that's going to be in good shape is Peter, because he's a private pilot, and Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, and even, you know, the little bit of stuff David did, like with his the balloon launch of the plane where he went up how high, I don't even remember now, but, he, 50, 60,000 feet, still had video, still had control of the plane, and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, on a garage budget.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. So, interesting stuff. Anybody want to throw anything else out on that before I'll move on?
Sure, I got one thing to say.
Go for it.
I've said this 1,000 times on forums. I think people are probably sick of hearing it. But the biggest thing is that people go after and attack the wrong thing. You know, we've beat this horse enough, but I'm going to say one more thing. You know, there is so much hate for the DJI Phantom and the DJI NASA board. Mm-hmm. Oh, they all fly away and they do this and do that.
That's true.
You know, someone even, you know, did the math. I have 3,800 and some change flights on my hexacopter. Well, that's 10 flights every day for a year. Well, my copter's 3 years old, you know?
Right.
And when you fly as often as I do, I mean, I work for myself. I literally fly every day and have, you know, in the early parts of my career, done lots of aerial video work. I've flown 40 flights in a day before, working a 12-hour shift, and we're just, you know, knocking stuff out. So, you know, that being said, I fly NASA boards, and I've never had a flyaway in 3.5 years. I've never had a DJI board not do what it was supposed to. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of learning that needs to go on. If there's a copter flying away, there's probably a reason for it. You know, if you don't have a GPS lock, your copter's not going to know where to come home to. So I think there's some simple things, and I think it's just this explosion of new pilots that don't understand the technology and that, relying on all these autonomous features. Well, they're going to error at some point. And so not knowing how to fly your helicopter in a manual mode when the autonomous mode fails you, that's a huge issue.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's part of that safety of being a good and competent RC pilot is having the ability to control your machine in all situations.
Right.
See, I kind of liked what the AMA was talking about, you know, and you can even, you know, hook those guys in with this is – for them to, okay, you want to conceal carry. Go through a course, get your license, now you can conceal carry. Do the same thing with this. Have an education where, okay, you have to take so many hours, get a certification, now you can fly. And it doesn't have to be tied to an AMA field.
Sure.
I can go still fly, but I got the certification. Now you're educated. Now, is it going to stop the idiots? No. It's like anything else.
Exactly.
Idiots are always idiots.
Right.
They're not going
to
follow it anyways.
Some of the proper tools to get
started. Sure. Go through a ground school so you learn about airspace and you learn about weather and you learn some of the things you need to. take a test, get a certification, and be done with it.
Exactly.
And then punish the people who don't follow those regulations.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. See, where now you're not going to have some kid who's going to turn around, mom and dad's going to give him the money, he's going to run up to his local hobby store and buy it. No, you got to have certifications fly
if
this
you're
thing.
Fly so,
yes, if you're
going to
be. Well, I mean, even as a hobby. Yeah. I mean, even as a hobby, some kind of an education that just helps, you know, kind of bridge that gap, you know, to keep people. And that's only going to catch the people who just don't know. People who say, wow, this thing's really cool. I can go out and buy this thing, and I want to do this, and they have no knowledge. Not somebody that's even wanting to commit a crime or anything or to do anything bad. It's just they don't know.
Yeah, some of the rules that they've came out with makes little Joey, who goes to Toys R Us and buys an air hog, a criminal.
I know. Exactly.
I was laughing. My wife and I were talking the other day. You know, I have these big, you know, 4-foot hexacopters, and everyone looks at them because the media has assigned the word drone.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You know, drone sounds so formidable, and it sells a story. And there's some truth to that, I believe.
There is.
I feel like digging my TRX 800 back out of the and saying, oh, that's a helicopter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No one's going to look twice at me. I'm flying a helicopter. Yeah. I'm not flying a drone.
Exactly.
You know? Even though that thing could cut a person in half.
Yeah, and sounds mean. Yeah, exactly.
So. Yeah, I was flying my tricopter in my front yard, and a neighbor comes over and says, is that one of those drones?
Exactly.
I started chuckling. I said, only if you watch too much news.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, and that's probably the most common thing I get asked when I'm out flying something is, you know, well, what if someone uses that to spy? Well, you know, I've got my cell phone right here.
Yes.
And I can do that silently, and you'd never know I'm but you're... At least the drone is buzzing around.
To sneak up on somebody.
Sounds like a leaf blower. And here was my question. I actually had a lady say the same thing to me once. Are you going to come spy in my bedroom windows? I said, well, do you sleep with your blinds open? You know, I close mine at night. I don't know about you.
Oh, that's too funny.
I think we could probably talk about this for weeks.
Yeah. Absolutely. So anything else you wanted to add, Fred, or I'll move on?
No, other than a shameless plug, you know, I think that flight tests, you know, amongst other organizations is probably the best thing we have for the hobby because, you know, it's a source that people feel comfortable going to and talking to, even as beginners. Not like some, you know, you got some places that if you go as a beginner, they're going to run you off.
But,
you know, flight test is great because, the videos, the forum, the article section, they all appeal to the beginner, so it's a more welcoming environment. I think that, you know, that's probably going to be the strong point of the hobby is to get more people into that.
Right. I agree with you. I mean, that even me learning, like getting on RC groups, trying to ask questions or something and just getting flamed, you know, you just want to quit at that point. <sometime. laughs>
Maybe that's a conspiracy in itself. Maybe they're trying to get you to quit.
All right. We've been rattling on here for almost an hour. I got one more thing I wanted to talk about. I'm trying to find the full story here, but and I just want to know if this is a good thing, bad thing. But as many of you may know, the FAA reached a settlement with Raphael Parker in court. Now, originally they had him in there for, you know, $10,000, I think, was the initial fine. And they settled for, I think, $1,000. And it's done over with, no more, you know, it's done.
Well, wow, can I take that one first?
Yeah, go for it. I'm going to try to find the full story.
I'm going to be,
Hold on.
Because this is After Hours podcast, we're allowed to be totally truthful, right?
Go for it.
My initial gut reaction to hearing that, and that's the first I've heard that, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm friends with him on Facebook and talk to him here and there. My initial gut reaction to that is that's a negative thing for hobbyists because if he settled and paid money, that shows that the FAA has the right to fine us because whether they fined him $10 or $10,000, if he, you know, settled and paid that fine, now the FAA can collect fines from other people in whatever, you know, dollar amount they see fit.
Mm-hmm.
It almost kind of hands the power to them to just throw these fines at people now and justify collecting on them. That's, you know, maybe someone else will have a rebuttal to that, but that's my initial reaction.
Boy, this was a long one. See if I can try to brief through this here a little bit. Raphael Parker decided to defend this case in 2013 rather than pay the FAA's $10,000 fine. It was clear that the FAA took action against him, and his fight was commercial in nature. Obviously, we know, let's see. When the FAA appealed, they're pleased that several parties filed friend of, boy, this is getting into lawyer stuff here. The case stood for proposition that before government regulates the use of new technology, it would first understand the actual risk and benefits of the technology with the people and the companies who feel the impact of those regulations. The case inspired many people to express their thoughts about what regulations would be appropriate for individuals and companies developing and using the great technology, not only for business purposes, but also for humanitarian and environmental causes. The National Transportation Safety Board in November decided the appeal very narrowly, reversing the administration law judge and holding that model aircraft operator to a single aviation regulation. It tells you the regulation. Whether any aspect of Rafael's flight was actually reckless or not was not decided. NTSB board did not comment on whether commercial use is or is not prohibited, but it did recognize the fundamental problem with the FAA's current position. Certain provisions of the federal aviation regulations may not be logistically applicable to model aircraft. And it goes into great detail, but actually he did settle for $1,000. I kind of heard, I was trying to get on the forums arena, from what I gathered from everything, that it wasn't going anywhere. They weren't winning, they weren't losing on either side. It wasn't going to go anywhere, so they finally said, okay, let's settle this. What can we do? And they, you know, came to the $1,000.
Yeah. My thing is, if the NTSB says that the FAA doesn't have an, you know, ground to charge this, they, what did they fine him for?
Right.
Based on what law, what did he break, what did he commit that says he has to pay $1,000 or $10,000? And I guess that's where my biggest issue lies.
Yeah.
You know, I think that for them to just bully people into to fining, you know, paying a fine when there's no law, that's like, you know, there's a million analogies we can make.
Yeah.
What, you know?
Yeah. What do you think, Fred?
Well, what I'm finding troublesome is that I'm going through reading up on different articles while you're reading it too, is I can't find anywhere exactly what it was that they fined him for. You know, just vague stuff about operating drones recklessly. In fact, here on the Wall Street Journal, and it says, and since it's an initial fine against Mr. Perker, the FAA has proposed civil penalties against four other people for operating drones recklessly. You know, again, kind of like you guys saying, what laws that they're using, because, you know, if they're trying to use full-scale aircraft regulations against them for flying under 400 feet or for inside of a facility, that the private facility that they've invited them into, you know, it, that really opens up a lot of can of worms for them.
Yeah, I guess my biggest question here, though, is it a win for us hobby, RC community, or do you think it's a loss?
It's kind of a draw. I mean, we won some because, I mean, the FAA just didn't have – time and time again, we're proving they didn't have grounds to prosecute. But at the same time, like Eric's saying, it's opened the door to letting them fine people. And that's where it's going to be. The problem's going to be whether they win or lose the case, they have the money to take us to court over and over and over again.
Yes.
How many of us, I mean, fortunately, Rafael had the money and was able to contact the right people to have a good lawyer. How many of us have that?
Exactly.
And they know it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which means it's going to get worse, and so that's why I consider this a loss.
I got you.
You know, they're going to – that's just started the ball rolling to start throwing out $1,000 fines because they know people would rather pay that than keep going back to court over and over and drag it out over, you know, a year or whatever.
Right.
So
yeah, I mean, you're looking at anywhere from $10,000 to $50,000 just for court fees.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know, it's almost like they just got worn down with it all, you know, just $1,000 to put it behind you.
Makes you want to take up scuba diving or something.
Which I was kind of shocked that the FAA backed down on this, you know, when they got millions of dollars back in them, that they finally said, yeah, okay,
we'll settle for $1,000.
Yeah, exactly.
Why didn't they just drop the case if that's my thing. If they were coming to a draw and nobody was getting anywhere, the FAA wasn't able to advance forward in the case, Rafael wasn't able to advance forward with a win, why didn't the FAA say, okay, all charges dropped until we can get this under, you know, under a regulation that we can't enforce?
Right.
Until then, I think that's a loss.
Yeah, it seems like they almost wanted to go, well, we kind of maybe won, so we'll $1,000, you know? Yeah. So, I don't know. Anything else on that? Other than that, nothing, Wayne?
This is the quietest I've ever seen, Wayne.
I get him fired up all the time. I probably shouldn't do that. Anything else, Fred? Do you want to add?
Well, I think what the answer to the question as far as why did the FAA settle for 1,000 instead of just dropping it is legal precedent.
Exactly.
They got their foot in the door. They got the camel's nose under the tent. They you know, quote unquote, won this one because they did get the money. They did penalize someone.
Right.
You know, otherwise, if they completely let it go, they'd have to let every single other one go.
You were talking to Josh, weren't you? Because Josh said that camel's nose under the tent thing the other day, and none of us knew what that meant. And now you just used it too.
It's. I don't think I got it from him. It's one I've used before.
Okay, gotcha. Thought maybe you two had been talking.
That's very possible. All right. Well, you know, this has been quite the intense hour of the FT After Hours. Probably the most intense hour we've ever done, probably. But it was good. I think it needed out, you know, discuss and get out there. And I'm open and willing down the road if maybe we get the phones going, we could, you know, talk to some other people, get their thoughts and feelings on it, and, you know, see what happens. We did have a lot more other stuff here to talk about, but we'll jump back in here. We got a bunch of new stuff that came in from the toy fair over at Nuremberg, Germany.
Nice.
That comes out, and that's this is kind of my exciting time of the year because they have the toy fair, which a lot of the RC stuff comes out of there. We got the Toledo show coming up here shortly, and we get a lot more new stuff. So this is kind of the exciting part of the year coming up, right? Right, Mike? He's still figuring out how to mount that new gun on his quadcopter.
No, I will never do that. Well, I won't say never, but it doesn't sound like a good idea to me.
I'm still excited. I know it's almost 6 months away still, but you know, I'm already starting to work on our flight fest plans with volunteers and whatnot.
Oh wow!
So,
yeah, is that?
I mean, July sounds far away for all you people covered in snow, but man, I'm excited. We're going to have an awesome year this year.
Good. I am so excited. I can't wait for Flight Fest this year.
Hey, I got to admit, I like the pictures that you posted out there on your hiking trip. The only thing I'd seen missing was me in the picture, so I wish I was down here hiking with you.
Yeah, and I felt only slightly guilty putting pictures of myself in shorts and T-shirt while I'm hiking.
Yeah, sure you did.
Did you?
You know, the invite's open, Wayne. Come on down. I'll skip out of work for a few days and we'll go.
Yeah, we're going to have to do that. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. I've already been trying to plot how to get down there and what to do with the kids. My wife says, yeah, go. And I'm like, how can I do this? All right. Well, Fred, we appreciate your input and it was good to talk to you.
Yes, absolutely. To hear from you.
And again, we'll get back in here. We'll get back to the fun, the crash stories, and new products, and you know who crashed over the weekend. Which I have a crash story from over the weekend, but we'll get back into that. So,
I noticed it wasn't the artisan anyhow.
No, it wasn't. No. We're gonna get out of here. All so right. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back here very shortly. All right, we'll see you.
See you guys.
See you next time.
See you, Fred.
Bye.